Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 8, Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Rai. Today we're doing text 37 and 38. I'll do 37 and then we can do 38 together. Tomara kripaya tomaya karaya nindya karma sakshat isvara tumi ke jane tomara marma. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. Therefore, no one can understand your purpose. By your mercy, you are touching me, although that is not sanctioned by the Vedas. Short purport. A sannyasi is strictly forbidden to see a Vishayi or materialistic people. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of his boundless and causeless mercy, could show favor to anyone, regardless of birth and position. Text 38. Ama nistarite tomar ihan agamana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Ama nistarite tomar ihan agamana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Amanistari te tomarihana agumana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Amani starite tomari hanagamana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Amani starite tomari hanagamana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Ladies? Amanistarite tomari hanagamana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Amanistarite tomari hanagamana. Paramadayalu tumi patita pavana. Ama nistarite. To deliver me. Tomara. Your. Ihan. Here. Agamana. Appearance. Paramadayalu. Greatly merciful. To me. You. Patita pavana. The deliverer of the fallen souls. Translation. You have come here specifically to deliver me. You are so merciful that you alone can deliver all fallen souls. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Navaratam Das Thakur sings in his Partana, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Doya Koramore Tomara Vina Kedayalu Jagata Sangsare Patita Pavana Hetu Tava Avatar. Mo samo patita prabhu, na paibe ar. My dear Lord, please be merciful to me. Who can be more merciful than your Lordship within these three worlds? You appear as an incarnation just to reclaim the conditioned, fallen souls. But I assure you that you will not find a soul more fallen than me. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's specific mission is to deliver fallen souls. Of course, in this age of Kali, there's hardly anyone who is not fallen, according to the calculations of Vedic behavior. In his instructions to Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the so-called followers of Vedic religion in this way, Madhya 19.146. Veda nistha madhye adheka veda mukhe mane, veda nishira papikare dhamma nahi gane. So-called followers of Vedic principles simply accept the Vedas formally, but they act against the Vedic principles. This is symptomatic of this age of Kali. People in this age, people, claim to follow a certain type of religion, saying formally, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, I'm this or that. But actually no one follows the principles enunciated in religious scriptures. This is the disease of this age. However, merciful Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has simply advised us to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. The Lord can deliver anyone and everyone, even though one may have fallen from the injunctions of revealed scriptures. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special mercy. Consequently, he is known as Patita Pavan, the deliverer of the fallen souls. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Perhaps they are not the most famous verses or prayers to the Supreme Lord, but these are extremely sweet statements by Ramananda Roy. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, therefore no one can understand your purpose. By your mercy you are touching me, although this is not sanctioned by the Vedas. You have come here specifically to deliver me. You are so merciful that you alone can deliver all fallen souls. He's feeling very thankful, gratitude, appreciative that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has come to his personal, after him personally. This is a very heartfelt exchange, although it's very short. Previously, the story gives us a little more insight as to how Ramananda Roy may have cultivated this kind of a mood that we're reading about not being touched by a sannyasi. Thanks. Last couple of weeks ago when I gave class, we talked about the ecstatic exhibition of ecstatic symptoms that Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt together. And we talked about how their underlying consciousness affected what happened on the outside of their body. So similarly, Ramananda Roy's story reveals a little more about why he would feel like this. It's revealed when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was discussing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had delivered him, and then he expressed that he was going to South India. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted him to meet Ramananda Roy and explains about him. He says, please do not neglect him, thinking he belongs to the Sudra family engaged in material activities. It is my request that you meet him without fail. So in the purport, it explains a little further about Ramananda Roy's situation in society. Srila Ramananda Roy belonged to the Karana class, which is equivalent to the Kayastha class in Bengal. This class is regarded all over India as Sudras. It is said in Bengali, Kayasthas were originally engaged as servants of Brahmins who came from North India to Bengal. Later, the clerical class became Kayasthas in Bengal. Now there are many mixed classes known as Kayastha. Sometimes it is said in Bengal that those who cannot claim any particular class belong to the Kayastha class. Although these Kayasthas or Karanas are considered Sudras, they are very intelligent and highly educated. Most of them are professionals, such as lawyers or politicians. Thus, in Bengal, the Kayasthas are sometimes considered Kshatriyas. In Orissa, however, the Kayastha class, which includes the Karanas, is considered in the Sudra category. Srila Ramananda Roy belonged to this Karana class, and therefore was considered a Sudra. He was also the governor of South India under the regime of Maharaj Pachaparudra of Orissa. In other words, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya informed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Ramananda Roy, although belonging to the Sudra class, was a highly responsible government officer. As far as spiritual advancement is concerned, materialists, politicians, and Sudras are generally disqualified. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya therefore requested that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not neglect Ramananda Rai, who was highly advanced spiritually, although he was born a Sudra and a materialist. Living in Orissa, it's a unique experience, even compared to other parts of India. It's an extremely caste-conscious culture. Even I read the autobiography of a gem salesman from France who traveled in the 1600s. He traveled throughout India. And he would bring gems to the different Mughal emperors and kings of different countries. And it was a fascinating two-volume book on his whole travels throughout India 100 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he even mentions that in his entire travels throughout the whole country of India, there was no place more prejudiced against him being a white man than Orissa. The Brahmins wouldn't allow him in their homes. He was a malecha, a yavana, an outcast. And they feel that just like that's why they don't allow Westerners into the temple. The idea is that a person is born so low, so wretched, that his very presence is contaminating. So if a person from outcast family walks into the temple, it must be cleansed before they can do the rituals. If a baby being carried by her mother passes urine or stool in the temple, obviously the temple, they empty the whole temple and clean it. If somebody cuts themselves, gets cut, and bleeds on the floor of the temple, they have to empty the temple and clean the temple. This is the Vedic conjunctions. So the culture in which Ramananda Roy was brought up was that he was a Sudra. So he's feeling that this sannyasi, very advanced soul, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has embraced him in front of all these other caste Brahmins. So he's on one hand feeling very humble, and that's the thread that I wanted to follow about different people's character. One of the qualities, characteristics of devotees is humility. But this humility is kind of like when I hear about humility, it kind of goes into a generic package of humility. But humility is actually extremely individualistic as well, as we'll discuss a little later. But when I was studying different devotees' humility and their expressions of humility, I also understood that there's an unhealthy humility. And in psychology, the term isn't really humility, but it's self-esteem. So this week I've been studying how a person can be humble, but have healthy self-esteem. Because low self-esteem is not healthy, but humility is. So there's a fine line between these different natures. Here are some descriptions of healthy self-esteem. They're able to act according to what they think is the best choice, trusting their own judgment, and not feeling guilty when others don't like their choices. Now think of Srila Prabhupada as an example. We know that he was humble, but he didn't have low self-esteem. He didn't care what other people thought of his choices, because his choices were based on the parampara, on the orders of his spiritual master, on the orders of Krishna. So in this way, his self-esteem, his determination to carry out an activity wasn't influenced in such a way that he felt low esteem. Fully trusting in their capacity to solve problems, not hesitating after failure or difficulty. They ask others for help when they need it. It almost sounds self-contradictory that a person's humble, but yet he can ask for help. But when you analyze it and you understand the concept of self-esteem being strong and healthy, then a person would naturally be able to ask for help and be humble. They consider themselves equal in dignity to others rather than inferior or superior. While accepting differences in certain talents, personal prestige, or financial standings. It's a perfect example of a person who's healthy in their spiritual understanding that by my karma, I have a certain nature, certain income, certain intellect, and another person isn't superior or inferior to me based on those material conditions. Therefore, a person can be humble and at the same time have healthy self-esteem. They take for granted that they are interesting and valuable person for others, or at least for those with whom they have a friendship. This is important in our dealings of association with devotees. We should make other devotees feel encouraged, inspired, important, rather than criticize them and put them down and try to kind of force our concept of how they should be humble before us. They're sensitive to the feeling and needs of others, respect generally accepted social rules, and claim no right or desire to prosper at another's expense. These are some of the qualities of healthy self-esteem. And this is an interesting analyzation that psychologists have made. A person can have high self-esteem and hold it confidently where they do not need any reassurance from others to maintain their positive self-view. Whereas others with a defensive high self-esteem may still resort to positive self-evaluations on a Rosenberg scale, as all high self-esteemed individuals do. However, their positive self-view is fragile and vulnerable to criticism. Defensive self-esteem individuals internalize subconscious self-doubt and insecurities, causing them to react very negatively to any criticism they receive. There is a need for constant positive feedback from others for those individuals to maintain their feelings of self-worth. The necessity of repeated praise can be associated with boastful, arrogant behavior, and sometimes even aggressive and hostile feelings toward anyone who questions the individual's self-worth, an example of threatened egotism. So it's interesting that we see that there's actually healthy, pure, well, let's call it pure humility and pure self-esteem, but there's also unhealthy, defensive, high self-esteem, where a person feels antagonistic towards another when they're criticized, and they feel a necessity to defend themselves. So it brings us to the prayer by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shikshastakam, that feeling humble, but humble in a pure sense. This can also be magnified or clarified by understanding unhealthy self-esteem. Hypersensitivity to criticism with resentment against critics and feelings of being attacked. Srila Prabhupada, again, is the perfect example. When Srila Prabhupada was criticized, he didn't feel resentment or hypersensitivity. He was like a lion, but he was also like a rose, the rose and the thunderbolt example. Chronic indecision and an exaggerated fear of mistakes, excessive will to please and unwillingness to displease any petitioner, perfectionism, which can lead to frustration when perfection is not achieved, neurotic guilt, dwelling on and exaggerating the magnitude of past mistakes. There's that one example where, I don't know who did it, but it's a famous story. Somebody came before Srila Prabhupada. In our purport today, Srila Prabhupada quoted Narottam Das Thakur, where he's saying, "My dear Lord, please be merciful. No one is more fallen than me." Who? Vishal. Was it Vishal? He came before Prabhupada and said, please bestow your mercy on me. There's no one more fallen than me. And Prabhupada said, you're not the most fallen anything. You're not the most anything. So the idea was he may be feeling that, but there was obviously some need for refinement of the sentiment. And Srila Prabhupada was noting that. Floating hostility and general defensiveness and irritability without any proximate cause. Pessimism and a general negative outlook. It's a really good one amongst devotees. They think that if I'm going to be humble, then I have to see this material world as a place of misery, birth, death, disease, and old age. It's a horrible place, always in anxiety, always frustrating, and they meditate on this. So how does blissful spiritual life fit into that life's outlook? There has to be a proper balance. There has to be proper understanding of both the bliss of spiritual life, the concept of that, the availability of that in our day-to-day life, contrasted and compared with the sufferings of material life. Envy, insidiousness, or general resentment seeks temporary setbacks as permanent. Sees temporary setbacks as permanent, intolerable situations. That Matra Sparsis to Kaunteya, Shitoshna Shukadukada. If something's not going right at the moment, it doesn't mean that that's going to go on for the rest of life. A person with negative self-esteem, low self-esteem, will get so into the moment, so depressed, so absorbed in the intolerable condition, and not see the light at the end of the tunnel, not understand that I simply must tolerate this at the time, and it will pass. When given feedback, individuals with low self-esteem often take it personally and can be devastated by it. Low self-esteem individuals are very critical of themselves and depend on the approval of others for their own evaluation of self-worthiness. They believe that a person's approval of them is dependent on their performance, whether it be academic, relationships, etc. People with low self-esteem view their likability in terms of successes. Others will accept them if they exceed, but will not if they fail. So it leads us to the definition of humility in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna describes different divisions of knowledge, and humility is the first topic that he discusses. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada points out really nicely our misconception of knowledge in this material world. The process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction in the field of activity. In other words, if someone knows something about this material world, how it functions, how the modes interact, they know something about science or biology or how the universe works. This is considered knowledge, academic knowledge. And there are whole institutions, Harvard, Dartmouth, Yale, Ivy League schools, colleges all over the world, teaching what they consider knowledge. Srila Prabhupada says, but actually this is the real process of knowledge, these different topics. The first one, humility. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. This really requires contemplation. Humility means that one should not be anxious for the satisfaction of being honored by others. So, what I want to do now, do we have a microphone for everybody? Like Jeopardy, or you know, you have these game shows where people say something and the others have to guess it. So, I'll start off with some different devotees and their expressions of humility. The idea of this exercise is to show and reveal to us how humility is actually extremely individualistic. It's not that generic package of just humble. There is very specific humility that reveals a person's character and heart by their statements of humility. For example, Who is this? I have in the past addressed you as O Krishna, O Yadava, O friend, without knowing your glories. Please forgive me, whatever I have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times while relaxing or lying on the same bed or eating together, sometimes alone or sometimes in front of many friends. Please excuse me for my offenses. Everybody in this room, I think, knows who this is. Isn't it? It's amazing. Another one. Oh, my Lord, because I was seeking an opulent material position, I was performing a severe type of austerities and penances. Now I have gotten you, who are very difficult for the greatest demigods, saintly persons, and kings to attain. I was searching after a piece of glass, but instead I have found a most valuable jewel. Therefore, I am so satisfied that I do not ask any benediction from you. Everybody knows who it is. So, can anybody come up? We don't need, this is, you're like the all-star Pushkar for this game. Can anybody even paraphrase a prayer by someone that will reveal to us in a moment who that person is, just by their expressions of humility? Nagaraj Prabhu, give it a shot.
I was headed for a blind well full of snakes following the general populace, but your servant Narada Muni delivered me. Therefore, my only business is to serve him.
Very sweet, for 5 points. Anybody? Radhadamadar. Who was it?
Queen Kunti prayed that she wished that these calamities would come again and again, because when they come, that you're there, and when you're not,
beautiful,
not here, you go away.
So beautiful. Each person's expression from their heart reveals it. Vyasuno?
Kind of moralists will accuse me of something. Do you remember? I don't remember. It's in English. Sharp moralists, yeah. Accuse me that I'm...
Family, wealthy Mammonites.
Pushkar? Pushkar?
All
right, do what? Oh.
Accusing.
Go ahead.
I know Madan knows him. Who is it? Madhavendapuri, but...
Jai.
Slogan. In this particular devotee, were we guessing this or what?
You make it so everybody else has to understand it by the verse.
I'm known as a great king, but actually I'm completely defeated when I'm in my private quarters. I'm defeated by my wives, my senses. This great king who had been sleeping for a long time.
Wow, who's that one?
Muchikunda. He was...
There's a verse in the Nectar of Devotion where he says that I have no love of Krishna, nor have any love for the causes of developing love of Krishna, namely chanting and hearing. The process of devotion is by which one is also thinking, was always thinking of Krishna. That is also lacking in me. And above all, I'm not even born of a nice family. Therefore, I must simply pray to you, Gopi Jana Vallabha. I simply wish and hope that I may approach your lotus feet, and that hope has given me great pain, because I'm thinking myself so unqualified.
Ooh. Anybody know this one? Jai. Ramanya Prabhu.
Ainanda Tanunja Kinkaram Patita.
So he says, I don't know why you brought me in this hellish place. Make me dance, make me dance.
Very good. How do you go? Madan Prabhu? Nartam? Come on. Give him the microphone. Give Nartam the microphone. You could say one prayer by somebody that they felt humble. Don't know one? Ladies?
I am prepared to become the most arrogant in the service of my spiritual master.
Who's that one?
Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati.
Really? Oh, very nice. Just see the apparent contradiction where one is expressing, I'm prepared to become the most arrogant in the service of my spiritual master. It means that his self-esteem is extremely healthy. He's humble, and he's willing to act in any way for the service of his spiritual master. Samapriya? Anybody else? Ladies, Indrani? Adori Gopi?
Aidina Daya Vinatane, Vatoranata Kadav Alokyase, Hridayam Swamaloka Kataram Daiti Brahmyati Kim Karam Yaham.
English, so that we can all tell who it was.
Oh my Lord, Master of Mathura, O most merciful one. Oh my God. Thank you. What's the rest of it? Pushkar.
The English, I'm not, I don't.
Oh my Lord, O Master of Mathura, O most merciful one.
O most merciful master, O master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now?
I got one now. Mm-hmm. That my Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stem of your lotus feet, of your lordship, and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of death, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? There was one point that I just thought would be interesting to add here. It mentions that this humbleness that you're discussing,
mm-hmm.
just right after that, Prabhupada says, this humbleness of the pure devotee who is 100% engaged in his service, puts the devotee of the Lord in a trance by which to realize everything.
Nice.
So it says, because to the sincere devotee of the Lord reveals himself as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:10. The Lord being the Lord of intelligence in everyone, even in the non-devotees, favors his devotee with the proper intelligence so that automatically the pure devotee is enlightened with the factual truth about the Lord and his different energies.
All glories to electronic devices. Vegavati, you had another one?
No.
Oh, okay. Mataji?
This is a paraphrase. I'll keep my head at the lotus feet of my spiritual master, and I will brook no opposition to his command. That one is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describing humility, that whatever obstacles come in, I'm focused on the command of my master, and any obstacles that come in the way, I put aside, whatever obstacles come from the world. And another one is humility means to do something bold for Krishna.
Oh, nice one. Sri?
This is a paraphrase. I was thinking he was the greatest materialist, just focused on his opulence and his wealth, but actually he is a greater Vaishnava than me. There's nothing for me to do except take initiation from him.
Who is it? Okay, here's a couple of more. How is it possible for me, who have been born in the family of Asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and all saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words, although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness. Then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified. What wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances unto you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless, the attempt was successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, the fallen demon, was never achieved even by demigods or the leaders of various planets. And you know, I told you, he'd be an all-star in this one. Anybody know who that was?
Prahlad Maharaj.
No, that one's Bali.
There's a few more like that, too. Maybe another 30-something.
Yeah. What am I? A small creature measuring 7 spans of my own hand. I am enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window. O Lord Adhoksaja, Does a mother take offense when a child within her womb kicks with his legs? And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or unreal, that is actually outside your abdomen? All right. Okay, Vegavati. Yeah, of course.
Mystics, how then can we women know you perfectly?
Ah, very beautiful. So we can see that each one of these, it was easy to pick them out, most of them. And it reveals each person's character and nature. So then I was contemplating, why study so much philosophy? Why hear so much about Krishna? And the idea is that by hearing these things, what's supposed to happen in our heart? That our, if we have good self-esteem, if we have proper humility, then there is nothing wrong with our composing our own individual expressions of humility. That's actually there, inherent within our heart, and it should be cultivated. By hearing the wonderful expressions, it's pleasurable to hear about the humility of others. There's something in the heart that becomes enlivened and pleasurable. So in our own expressions, it's also important. It's a good thing to do that. Now, when in Jagannath Puri, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was with his associates, 5 days after the Rath Yatra, the goddess of fortune feels like, where is my husband? Why did he go on this vacation to his summer home in Gundicha? I should go get him. And they have a festival called Hara Panchami, where the goddess of fortune comes out of the Jagannath temple and goes after her husband to chastise him in Gundicha. And during that festival, Narada Muni, Srivas Pandit, expressed the moods of Narada Muni, glorifying the opulence of Dwarka, which was considered the temple of Jagannath. And Swarup Damodar took the side of the Brijbasis from Vrindavan and started glorifying the glories and qualities of the Vrindavan atmosphere. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much enjoyed this expression and exchange of that. So he asked Swarup Damodar to glorify the residents of Vrindavan. His answer: it is not possible to give a complete statement about the different types of jealous anger manifested by the gopis, but a few principles may serve as an indication. There are 3 types of women experiencing jealous anger. Now, a jealous anger, you think about it. What does jealous anger, what is it derived from? What scenario of events bring about the necessity for jealous anger? Can anyone say? Yes, Krishna's with someone else. He didn't choose you. So, it's on one hand an expression of humility, is it not? A person is feeling slighted. So, they're humble. But that humble in a left-wing gopi manifests itself in an antagonistic way. It's pure. It's not critical in a negative sense. It's pure jealous anger. It's pure out of love. It's this expression. So there's 3 types of people, 3 types of women experiencing jealous anger: sober women, restless women, and women both restless and sober. When a sober heroine sees her heroine approaching from a distance, she immediately stands up to receive him. When he comes near, she immediately offers him a place to sit. The sober heroine conceals her anger within her heart and externally speaks sweet words. When her lover embraces her, she returns his embrace. The sober heroine is very simple in her behavior. She keeps her jealous anger within her heart, and but with mild words, she smiles and rejects the advances of her lover. The restless heroine, however, sometimes chastises her lover with cruel words, sometimes pulls his ear, and sometimes binds him with a flower garland. The heroine, who is a combination of sobriety and restlessness, always jokes with equivocal words. She sometimes praises her lover, sometimes blasphemes him, and sometimes remains indifferent. Herons may also be classified as captivated, intermediate, and impudent. The captivated heroine does not know very much about cunning intricacies of jealous anger. The captivated heroine simply covers her face and goes on crying. When she hears sweet words from her lover, she is very satisfied. Both the intermediate and impudent heroines can be classified as sober, restless, and both sober and restless. All their characteristics can be further classified in three divisions. Some heroines are very talkative, some are mild, and some are equal poised. Each heroine, according to her own character, increases Sri Krishna's loving ecstasy. Although some of the gopis are talkative, some are mild, and some are equal poised, all of them are transcendental and faultless. They please Krishna by their unique characteristics. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt unlimited happiness upon hearing these descriptions, and again and again requested Swarup Damodar to continue speaking. So the idea that I wanted to kind of focus on in that reading, or the reason for that, is that each one of us, again, should feel the strength of our own character, understanding we are an individual, part and parcel of Krishna, and whether we're talkative or equal poised or captivated or restless, it's okay. Each one of us have a particular nature, and we shouldn't criticize so much or try to snuff out and suppress and oppress another's expression in any way, shape, or form. Our society is meant to inspire. Srila Prabhupada was so expert in that. He would inspire anyone. A person who was a drunk who brought in toilet paper to the temple was encouraged. Yesterday we were looking at an old Bhagavad Gita, and there was an introduction, like Allen Ginsberg. And then I looked up on YouTube and saw him chanting Hare Krishna with William Buckley. But he was in an interview on TV, and he brought out a little harmonium, and he did it. And, you know, and at the end of the William Buckley's commentary was, that was the most un-Hare Krishna Hare Krishna I've ever heard. So, but Srila Prabhupada encouraged him. He was kind of a oddball, but he was encouraged. Prabhupada encouraged everyone. So, finally, there's a nice book, if anyone wants to further study some of the sentiments that Gaura Govinda Maharaj wrote, called Mathura Meets Vrindavan. And it's a beautiful book about how Uddhava, who is a Mathurabasi, goes to Vrindavan and sees, and during his trip, when he went as a messenger, his interaction with the residents of Vrindavan. And it very nicely brings out different types of love. For example, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared before Devaki and Vasudev in the prison of Kamsa, he was four-handed, he was dressed as jewels, he was Vishnu. And they immediately offer their obeisances and pray. And what was Vasudev's mood? Anybody can kind of paraphrase what was Vasudev's kind of mood at that? Well, it was like, how many times should I have been ready for this? But I'm stuck in, I'm not able to, how many times, it was a kshatriya, how I should be able to celebrate this moment? I'm having a son, such an exalted person, but I'm in prison, I can't offer anything. What can I do? It's conflicted. It's a beautiful mood. And Devaki, but yes, they were awe and reverence, understanding the Supreme Lord had appeared. Whereas Mother Yasoda, when Krishna broke the butter pot, did she pay her obeisances? No, she tied him up. She went running after him. So these expressions of love in humility are wonderful topics. One more, since we have a little time. It's a beautiful purport where Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur describes Nanda Maharaj's mentality and mood after Uddhava tried to explain to him that your son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's his message coming from Mathura. he says, oh, no, that's Radharani. While Krishna's messenger continued to speak with Nanda, the night ended. The women of the cowherd village rose from bed and, lighting lamps, worshipped their household deities. They began churning yogurt into butter. This is when Uddhava had come and they saw the chariot out front. He had spent the night with Nanda. Though the entire night passed in discussion, Uddhava could not pacify Nanda and Yasoda, nor get them to accept his advice. Then Nanda considered the things in this way. Uddhava wants to enlighten us by saying that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Do we not know that? At Krishna's name-giving ceremony, I heard Gargamuni say, your son will be equal to Narayan in qualities. Indeed, who else is there more equal to Narayan than Krishna? Therefore, from Garga, we learned that our son is Narayan. Besides that, we also personally experienced our son to be Narayan when he killed Putana, Aga, and Baka, lifted Govardhan Hill, stopped the forest fire, made the ruler of Varuna offer respects. Certainly I realize that Krishna is Narayan, the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Brahman. Nevertheless, nothing inhibits me from thinking of Krishna as our son. The proof is Garga's words, Tasman Nanda Majo Yamte, O Nanda, this son of yours. Even though Krishna may be the Supreme Lord, we do not think of him as an object of worship. We simply think of Krishna as our son and find satisfaction by offering him the remnants of our chewed betel nut. If he were not our son, our minds would not be satisfied. Before Krishna's birth, we could meditate on Narayan, our family deity. But now, as soon as we meditate on Narayan, Narayan appears directly in front of us. This is a sign of satisfaction of our minds. Therefore, acting like this in relation to our son is not at fault. We are certainly Krishna's mother and father. Further, Krishna's own realization in this matter is also proof that we are his two parents. We have seen many times that his face becomes sad if we do not pamper him by offering the remnants of our chewed betel nut, lift him in our laps, and embrace him, kiss him, and so forth. If Yasoda were not his mother, how could she tie him up when he broke the yogurt pot? Seeing him unhappy on being tied up, I freed him and smiled, and he smiled with happiness. Because we are his parents, Krishna accepts our scolding, commands, and even our tying him up, although he may be the Supreme Lord. If it was not a fact that we are Krishna's parents, then how could the Supreme Personality, the all-pervading Absolute, be bound up by us? But now, after Krishna has killed Chanura, Kamsa, and others in Mathura, everyone is telling him, O Krishna, you are certainly the Supreme Lord. Moreover, Devaki tells Krishna, I am your mother. Vasudev tells him, I am your fathers. Others say, we are your paternal uncles. And yet others tell Krishna that they are his brothers, relatives, and friends. Whenever they try to bring Krishna to their various houses by inviting him there, they simply prolong his stay in Mathura. Then our son, the crest jewel of proper conduct, looks at their faces and falls further into their terrible trap. Being incapable of returning to his brudge because of his benevolent nature, I suppose Krishna told everyone, I am indeed the Supreme Lord, the creator of the universe. Who can be my mother or my father? And who can be my relative? Just look in all the scriptures, and you will see that I belong only to that person who renders devotional service unto me and no one else. Only to his house will I go, and he alone is my father and other relations. Nanda Maharaj continued to contemplate, but this Uddhava is simply a child. Even though he may be very intelligent, he cannot fathom the depths of my son's heart. Taking the literal meaning of Krishna's words as if they were Krishna's real thoughts, Uddhava has come from Mathura to given us advice. But my son has cleverly spoken quite correctly that he who renders devotion to me is my father, and in his house I reside. Therefore, I am sending this message back to Uddhava for Krishna. My dear Krishna, I have devotion to your lotus feet. Be merciful and be pleased with me so that I can attain you in devotional process of hearing and chanting about you, remembering you, and offering obeisances unto you. Receiving this message, my son will announce that to the assembly of Yadavas, O men of the Yadu dynasty, You could not exhibit devotion to me in this place, but Nanda Maharaj is doing so. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj is my real father, friend, beloved. I am now going to his house. Saying this, Krishna will surely come here. At last, Nanda Maharaj forgot all these deliberations and did not send any message to Krishna due to the influence of Sanchari Bhava, or humility, Dainya. Now, to continue the text, rising during the Brahma Muhurta period, the bridge buzzies lit lamps and worshipped the entrances of their homes, churned yogurt, and performed other domestic duties. So it's a beautiful description of Nanda Maharaj's humility. And once again, Ramananda Roy's expressions for today. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Therefore, no one can understand your purpose. By your mercy, you are touching me, although this is not sanctified by the Vedas. You have come here specifically to deliver me. You are so merciful that you alone can deliver all fallen souls. Any questions or comments? Samapriya?
Thank you. That was a very enlivening class. I would like to know your opinion on how one can develop this pure self-esteem and pure humility.
You know me better than that.
I'm serious. This is a big question.
The process of Krishna consciousness is one that will do that. By all the different instructions that we have, nectar of instruction is filled with beautiful core concept. Association with devotees, giving and accepting in charity, offering intimacy, hearing from them. It's a process. We're not pure. The whole idea is that the process of Krishna conscious lifestyle purifies us. We have to have that faith, that confidence, that determination, that patience, utsahan nistyan daryat, tat tat karma pavartanat. It's the first instruction. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam. Follow the instructions, and gradually we see that the process brings one to a more connected reality with their true consciousness. And obviously we all have the package of our past karma, our upbringing, our past lives, all these different things are there. But as stated by Srila Prabhupada in the purport, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. There's really no other way. There's no other way. There is no other way. The package is so packed up with cow dung, as Prabhupada would say. It's a nice way of saying something foul and not nice, that it can be cleansed by this process. There is no other way. That is the process. Anyone else? Jai Ramananda Rai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.